It's Abu here. You're probably wondering, what's different around here? And the answer is everything. I took the last year off, not just from podcasting, but from everything. I needed a reset. Last year was one of the hardest years of my life. And as you know, life doesn't just throw one thing at a time at you. It hits you with everything all at once. I hit a mental roadblock, my business hit a wall, and then I faced an unimaginable loss of someone I deeply loved. I had a reset. I went deep, asking myself, what's wrong with me? What did I do to deserve this? I struggled with grief, with loss, with relationships, with business, and family. I was operating from a place of seeking permission. Permission to let go, permission to step back, permission to prioritize myself. And then it hit me. You don't need anyone's approval to take the next step. You don't need permission to be a CEO. But you do need the tools, the mindset, and the support to lead in a way that doesn't cost you your peace. It took me over a decade to truly figure this out. And now I'm ready to keep going, sharing what's worked, what hasn't, and everything I'm still learning along the way. So if you're ready, and I know I am, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with someone who needs to hear it. Because this isn't just my journey, it's ours. Lastly, I just want to thank everyone that reached out to me over the last year just to check on me, make sure I was doing good. I truly appreciate the support, and I look forward to continue building more deep connections with you all. This is the Powered AF Podcast, a show about visionaries, high performers, and entrepreneurs, and their stories on how they push past fear, overcome imposter syndrome, and navigate through the mental roadblocks in order to achieve the highest level of success. And I'm your host, Abu Fofana. In this week's episode, we sit down with Maya Elias. Now, this episode is also a video, so you can head over to our YouTube channel and watch it. But in this episode, we're going to cover how to uncover your gifts and build the business that you love. Now, the reason why I love this episode so much, because Maya gets real, honest, and raw into her own career transitions. Y'all, she started out as a MySpace web designer, and she didn't know where she would end up today. So listen in. I'm super excited to be presenting this interview, and I hope that you truly enjoy and you take notes, because there's a lot of gems we talk about. We even talk about setting boundaries. This is an area that I struggle with, so I hope that you get a lot of wisdom and nuggets from this episode. Let's welcome Maya Elias. Welcome to the Powered AF Podcast. And the podcast is about, and the reason why I created it was to give people insight into the lifestyle, the thinking, the behind the scenes of, you know, top performers, entrepreneurs, visionaries, and how they're navigating imposter syndrome, how they're navigating success. And that looks different for every person. Mm-hmm. And so what I've been doing is interviewing extraordinary people. And in this week's episode, we have an even more extraordinary guest. We have Maya. So welcome to the show, Maya.
Thanks, Abu. I'm so excited to finally be on this podcast. You've been talking about it for a while now. So really honored to be here.
No, I'm excited to have you here because we have so much topics to cover. And even, you know, last day we went live on Instagram and we talked about some of the topics around advertising, organic, paid. But I'm super excited to have you. Now, for the audience members who don't know who you are, maybe they're living under a rock, you know, who are you in your own words and what do you do?
Who am I? So my name is Maya Elias. I am a personal branding strategist and the CEO of Built to Impact and Rebellious. And Built to Impact is a coaching company where we have coaching programs and live events primarily for women of faith who have an expertise, a gift, or a skill set, and they want to package up their expertise into a high-end coaching program or a high-end service. So work with coaches, designers, photographers, consultants, teachers, and really just helping them take their business to six figures and really helping them get their first five-figure launch and then taking their business to six figures.
And why do you believe like you're perfectly positioned to help these women? And are you helping women that are just starting out, women that are more seasoned entrepreneurs? Where are they in their journey as well?
Yeah. So when my clients come to me, they don't have a lot of experience in entrepreneurship. They've tried to dabble in it. The number one thing that we require of our clients before working with them is making sure that they have experience with their skill set. And we teach them the entrepreneurial side of it. We teach them how to get clients. We teach them how to position themselves online. So I teach them everything that I've been through as a service provider and an entrepreneur, and everything that I helped my clients with before coaching. So I started out as a web and graphic designer, and I learned how to position myself as a branding expert. And my clients at the time was the same target audience that I was that I'm working with right now. So I was working primarily with Black women who had a service that they wanted to get noticed for, and I was building their websites and helping them with their content. And so I do the same thing now, just without the web design portion. And, you know, the women that come to me, they're extremely brilliant. They've been in their industry for years. And when you've been in your industry for years, you almost forget where you started, and you forget how to, quote unquote, dumb down what you do. And so it's hard for them to get clear with their messaging and articulate the value of what they do. So that's what they come to me for.
Okay. And you just said a lot there. So I want to break that down step by step, right? Okay. And the first thing I want to talk about is you are a graphic designer. I never even knew that, right? So how did you even start in graphic design to now being a branding and positioning expert in the space that you occupy? How did that transition happen?
Yeah, so in high school, I had a Black Planet page, and I had a MySpace page, and I would always do like customizations and stuff. And then my first year of college, I met this guy, and he asked me if I knew how to create custom MySpace pages, and he paid me $50 for it. And that was my first experience in getting paid as a freelancer. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can get paid money doing things that I'm good at and doing things that I already enjoy doing, that I'm already doing for free. And so I just started charging more people for it. And then another guy, he had this like modeling agency. So I designed all of the MySpaces for all of his models. And then eventually, like when MySpace faded out, I started doing more websites for people. So that's how I got into web and graphic design. And then I transitioned into content creation, blogging, memberships, course creation, and coaching when I recognized that my clients didn't know how to leverage their websites because they didn't know what their websites needed to say. And so when my clients would come to me and say like, well, how do I get people to buy from me when they go to my website? What is my website supposed to say? That's when I recognized that my gifting was in messaging. So I would help them write their copy. I would help them figure out what they needed to say on social media. And because at the time I was already blogging, so they were recognizing like, well, you're growing your own audience by blogging and telling people how you make money as a freelancer. How can I do the same thing? And so I was helping them with their content and build their own personal brand.
Now, at any point, did you feel like, you know, you didn't have the right skill set to do what you were doing? Because when I hear graphic design, I'm thinking, you know, you went to school 4 years and you graduated with a graphic design degree, but you're telling me you were self-taught and you were also taught by experience as well by doing that. So at any point when you were getting these clients as a graphic designer, did you think, oh, am I the right person for the gig, for the job? I don't have a degree in graphic design.
Right. You know what? At the time, I don't have a reference point of thinking that. I was thinking to myself, like, I'm good at Photoshop and I know how to code, and people were coming to me, right? I wasn't seeking out people. So I'm like, well, if they're coming to me, then obviously I have something of value, and I was just having fun with it. But yeah, I would, you know, I did not go to school for it, but I would spend hours on YouTube learning how to work Photoshop, how to work Flash. Like back then, Flash websites were really popular. And then when it came to coaching, I wasn't really quite sure how to coach, but I knew that people kept wanting to get on the phone with me and ask me questions. So I'm like, well, let me charge at least for my time. So I just charged a smaller amount, and I'm like, let me see how they feel about it. At the end of our coaching sessions, I would say, you know, does this feel worth it to you? And as people were getting results, I felt more confident in my ability.
So as a high schooler, you're telling me that you started making money. Now, what were you charging charging when you first started? Were you charging, you know, $5,000, you know, to design graphics? What were you charging at that point? Do you remember?
Oh yeah, for MySpace pages, I was charging between $35 to $55.
$35 to $55, what?
Right, exactly. And it's so funny because, well, you know, I was 18 at the time, so this was my first year of college. I didn't start making money from it until college, but I remember like looking at one of my promo flyers for it, and it was like MySpace pages starting at $35, and it was like premium package $55. I'm like, I can't even believe that I thought $55 was premium. But to me, it was like, I'm 18, I'm living at home, I have no bills. You know, my parents are still paying for everything. So any dollar that came in was pretty much 100% profit, because I wasn't even paying for Photoshop. It was like, this was back then when you're doing the trials and you're getting the codes right from Google or YouTube or whatever, and you're putting it in. So if I made $55, I'm like, oh my gosh, all 55 of these dollars are mine.
So as you're making money now, it's not this enormous sum, but it's enough that it validates you. And you're saying, okay, people are reaching out to me because of something. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also seeing another pain point that they're having, right? It's really not their website. Or if I do their website, there's also something else that they need help with. Mm-hmm. When did you realize the next opportunity in your current one?
Yeah, I realized it when they were asking me about it. And so there were a couple things happening. I knew that they wanted to take their business to the next level. They wanted to launch their business. They wanted to make money. So they came to me saying, hey, I'm launching my business. I need a website and I need graphics. So in my mind, it's like, if you're telling me you want to make money and you're coming to me for web design, my website should be helping you make money. What would happen with some clients is, after a year of having their website, I go back and look at their website, because I'm always looking at my portfolio, and some of these websites wouldn't even be up anymore. And I'm like, how is it that you're not making enough money to even pay for your website to be up? Because it's probably $70 a year to keep your website up, right? And so I'm like, well, what's really going on here? The missing link is that they don't know marketing. And so in my mind, I didn't know how to phrase that at the time. When I was helping people build their brand, I didn't know I was helping people build their brand. I just knew I knew how to use Photoshop and I knew how to build websites. And so when clients would come to me like, hey, can we get on a call? I want to know what the website should say. Hey, can we get on a call? I need advice on this. I was like, that's the missing gap. Because if I've already completed your website and you still want to hop on a call, that's a service, you know? And so I was like, let's just call it consulting. I didn't really know what it was called at that time, but I'm like, I'm just going to charge for 3 calls and I help you get clear on your message and your positioning.
So at this point, were you in, because you told me you started it when you were in high school. So are you in college right now and you're consulting? Like what did you study when you went to college? Like mm-hmm. what was that transitional period from high school student mm-hmm. to this business? But where did college fit in?
Yeah. So in high school, I was creating my own MySpace pages. Like, that was just fun to me and enjoyable. And then when I got to college, somebody asked me if I knew how to do it and then paid me to do it for somebody else. So that's when I started making money. In high school, I was writing for my school newspaper. I was pretty much following the same trajectory as Maddie. She wrote for her school newspaper, so I wrote for my school newspaper. She eventually went to college for journalism, so I went to college for journalism. So I was a communications major with a concentration in broadcast journalism. So that's what I was in there for. I really liked writing, and I'm like, okay, I'll just do this. Eventually, I switched to, it wasn't computer science, it was software information systems with a concentration in web development. I had already figured out how to make websites, but I'm like, okay, if I'm going to stay in college, let it be something that's in line with what I'm doing.
Right.
But basically, everything I learned was from YouTube.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So YouTube University.
Yes, got it. YouTube University.
And can you let everyone know who Maddie is? You said you just name dropped Maddie, like, you know, can you let the people like know, right, who is Maddie?
Yes. So Maddie James is my older sister. She's a lifestyle influencer. And she pretty much just talks about her everyday life. She's a mom and a wife, and she started out as a style influencer. So she's amazing. She's the person that encouraged me to start blogging.
So would you say, and you know, in your family, was Maddie also the first entrepreneur, or allowed you to see yourself as an entrepreneur and be able to say, you know, I can make a living doing that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, first I'll say my mom was the first entrepreneur because she was selling Mary Kay in Atlanta and she was doing very well. My mom is really great in sales. She was so good, like for people that are familiar with Mary Kay, like once you hit a certain sales goal, they give you a pink Cadillac. Like she was that good that she got the pink Cadillac. Then she eventually phased out of it because my dad's job required us to move. But then Maddie and I are just kind of, I don't know, mischiefs, is that the word? But, you know, we are first generation Americans. So our parents came to this country with the expectation for us to go to college, for us to graduate college with a degree and get a good job. And Maddie has always wanted to be in entertainment in some way. So she also dropped out of college. And when she moved to New York, she originally wanted to be a singer, but that's when she found fashion and that's when she became a style blogger. So I got to see her like be in that element of like, oh, I'm blogging, I'm on the internet and stuff like that. And then I was doing graphic design, but I was not blogging. And she's like, you should start blogging. And that's how I started building my personal brand.
So you talked about, you know, you are first generation, you and your sister. How was the household? Like, was going to college really, really important? Did your parents go to college? You know, and you said Maddie dropped out of college. You said Maya dropped out of college. So what's going on here, right? Like college is, you know, typically, you know, I come from a household, African household. Yep, yep. College is life. And so you see your mom become an entrepreneur. You see Maddie dropping out. Like what's going on in your mind at that time? Mm-hmm. And what are these conversations like with your parents at the same time?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the amount of anxiety that I was experiencing trying to stay in college and manage this freelancing business that I had. I'm like, I have to stay in college. I have to please my parents. Like, and I'm the last kid that they're relying on to finish college. So in my mind, I'm like, I have to do this. I can't let my parents down. But I just could not focus on both. I did not really do well in college because my mind was, it was divided, you know? So I eventually dropped out of college and it was definitely one of the scariest decisions I've ever made. And my parents were absolutely disappointed because they're like, what's going on with our kids? And you know, the blogging industry is fairly new at the time, right? So the blogging industry is maybe 7-8 years old at the time, maybe. And so you got two of your kids dropping out because they want to make money on the internet. It's not adding up for them. So It was an interesting time.
But your mom was an entrepreneur, right? She, like you said, she was working at Mary Kay. So was that any influence into when, you know, she would say, well, why are y'all dropping out? Would you say, well, you're an entrepreneur? Was the goal to be an entrepreneur, or did you just not know what the goal was?
No, I never had a goal to be an entrepreneur. I had an expectation to go to college and get a degree and whatever it was. Like I had this traditional idea in my mind of like, I'm going to go to college and graduate by 21 and be married by 23 and have kids by 25. Like that's, you know, that's what I saw and what I expected. And I think I didn't even have the awareness of my mom being an entrepreneur until years ago. So it wasn't in my mind like, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur like mom. I thought I'm going to go to college and get a great job like my dad. And so that's kind of what was going through my mind. So I couldn't have even used the entrepreneurship thing against my parents.
Right. Now, was there anything you learned watching your mom as an entrepreneur or watching your dad that contributed to maybe where you are today? In terms of building a business, in terms of, you know, leadership style, in terms of, you know, starting from scratch, like, was there anything, you know, one or two things that you might have learned from either one of them that sort of contributed?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a level of discipline from my dad. Like when people are like, how do you work so hard? Or how did you get so much done at a young age? I think just having that African discipline inside my blood and that obedience that I needed to have, you know, as an African daughter was definitely instilled in me. And so I think a lot of the things that I learned, it wasn't like do this because it's entrepreneurial. It's just that a lot of the characteristics and habits that I have fit really well into the entrepreneurial landscape. And so, you know, and then my mom, like, she was great at sales because she's great at relationships. And I'm really great at relationship building and building community and making people feel very confident. When you can make people feel confident, it's easier for them to show up for themselves and they're happier to buy and they feel good. So being good at relationships, being a people person, but then also being extremely disciplined and obedient, those two things together has made me a really excellent entrepreneur.
No, and I think those are really good points because, you know, some people don't come from, aren't in households where there's like, you know, two parents that are examples, mm-hmm. and you could use some of those examples to propel yourself forward in whatever you decide you want to do. But I know a lot of who you are today is around your parents. You know, you talk about them. You know, I know you personally, so I see the relationships you have with them as well, and the relationship you have with your sister, Maddie. So she decides to drop out, wants to become an entrepreneur, maybe, and you said she finds fashion. Now, what do you think at that point that you were going to do when you dropped out, when you left school?
Well, when I dropped out, I was making maybe $4,000 a month consistently, $4,000 to $5,000 a month consistently, maybe even a little bit less, honestly. But I felt like I had a level of consistency. I feel like Maddie's story is completely different. She doesn't even tell this story a lot. So definitely push her to tell this story. I don't want to tell her story for her. But Maddie was the struggling artist. I didn't feel like I was struggling. I felt like I was struggling mentally because I couldn't make a decision of disappoint my parents or be happy in entrepreneurship. So, but financially, I'm like, I'm good. Like, I live in, at the time that I dropped out, I lived in a house with a roommate. My rent was maybe $600 a month. And again, I still have no bills at that time. I think my dad was still paying for my phone bill up until I dropped out of college.
He's like, all right now.
Oh yeah. Like, oh, you want to drop out? Great. No more money for you.
And so when you are, you know, you're making some money, you come to this fork in the road where you have to decide because the way, like you mentioned, your brain worked, you know, I needed to make a decision on which one am I going to pursue fully? Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to be here, but like I'm also making money on the side? Now, sometimes, you know, that money that you're making on the side, it's quick money. Mm-hmm. And there's this long-term game that you don't even know you're aware of. Mm-hmm. Because if you graduated school, you may have went and made $60,000 right out of undergrad or $80,000 right under undergrad. Mm-hmm. So when you came to this fork in the road, what were some of the things that allowed you to make that decision and be okay with it? Maybe you weren't okay.
Yeah.
But what did you conclude and say, okay, one, two, three, or here's some few things, this is why I should do this instead? Because I think a lot of people, they get stuck in this, how do I decide?
Yeah.
What's the formula of deciding? And it's different, but what was that for you?
Yeah, honestly, I was just annoyed and fed up. I was like, first of all, I'm mentally exhausted of this going back and forth. My boyfriend at the time, his dad was a retired pastor. So I had his dad praying for me. I had a whole conversation with him. He's like, it's not morally wrong to drop out of college. It feels morally wrong because you're disappointing your parents, but there's nothing wrong with it. And I think I just didn't want to do anything morally wrong. So at the time that I had made the decision to drop out, I had this client who I'd been working with for maybe 6 to 12 months, and I came through for him and designed his like entire expo for some, it was like some expo in Vegas for like cars and trucks. SEMA in Vegas. And he owned a trucking company, and I did all of his branding. I did all of the designs for the exhibition. I made sure everything got printed and it was there on time because he was working with the printer and they had screwed him over and all of that. And he was like, you really looked out for me. Like, I want to fly you and your boyfriend out to Vegas. And so I'm like, boom, cool. I can't believe I get a free trip to Vegas just by being a graphic designer. So we had that trip to Vegas, and so I was going to miss maybe like 2 days of school, and I had two tests that week. And so I went to my instructors, I think one class, I can't remember what the one class was, but I went to that instructor and I'm like, hey, can I take the test when I get back? And she's like, cool. And then the other class was a matrices class, which is like, what is even matrices? I don't know. It was some class I was already doing poorly in because it was a lot with numbers that I couldn't figure out. And so I told the instructor, like, hey, can I take my test early? Can I take it when I get back? And he told me that I would just have to fail and let my highest my highest graded test replace that. You know, in college when, you know, they're like, oh, your highest grade will replace your lowest grade. Right. Which is like, that doesn't even make sense. But so that's what he said. And I'm like, I can't believe I have to fail a test as an adult because I have something that I want to do schedule wise and I can't just take it earlier. I can't just take it later. To me, that didn't make sense. Like, why am I paying tuition and then also having to fail? It just wasn't adding up for me. So I was like, I just never went back.
Okay. So you just was like, you know what? I'm not. And did you? So I'm guessing you didn't have a conversation with anyone. You just made this decision and like your parents were unaware and you said, you know, this is where.
Yeah. I didn't have. Yeah, they were unaware.
Oh, they were unaware.
Yeah,
okay.
They were unaware. Okay. Yes, they were unaware. They did not know until maybe a week or two after I came back from Vegas. And so this was in November 2013. I was 23 years old. And I remember I finally was like, oh, my gosh, I have to tell my mom. Like, my boyfriend at the time was like, well, you eventually have to tell them. Like, we're kind of going there for Thanksgiving. And so I was like, okay, let me just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off. So I tell her while I'm out at the grocery store. I don't know. I'm just so random. But I'm like in like the taco aisle or something like that. And I'm like, okay, let me call her. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going back to school. And she's like, wait, what do you mean you're not going back to school? I'm really, because I am a people pleaser or I'm a recovering people pleaser, like confrontation was really hard for me and just to say the truth and be honest, right? So instead of being like, hey, mom, you know, I've really been thinking about the last year. I want to pursue design full time and I made the decision to drop out of college. Instead of just being clear and strong and confident in my voice, I'm vague, right? And so I'm like, yeah, so I'm, you know, I'm not going back to school. She's like, what do you mean you're not going back to school? I'm like, yeah, I'm just not going back. I just don't think it's for me. So vague. And it's like, this is like her world ends when her daughter says she's not going back to school. And I'm just being so casual with it because I'm so scared. So she starts freaking out. She starts crying. She's like, there's kids in Africa who are dying for a good education. And I'm like, this lady is so dramatic. And I was so mad at her. And we literally had a fight. I hung up on her. And then I eventually caught her a couple of days later and apologized, and we eventually moved on.
Okay. But that, I know there's more to the story, but we'll just leave it there. You called your mom, you told her, okay, mama, like, it's time for me to leave school. It's not for me anymore. And from there, what is your plan?
My plan is just to keep getting paid. Oh, also at the time, I was a subcontractor for a Fortune 500 company, and I was doing a lot of their branding. I was getting paid $10 an hour at the time, but that was still so much money to me. So I was probably getting maybe $2,500 a month from them, and then another $2,500 between 2 to 3 clients that I'd been working with long term over time. So I'm like, oh, well, my plan is just to keep working with clients and getting more clients and, you know, continue working as a contractor.
Really quickly, because you just dropped that. I was working at Fortune 500. Like, how'd you get that role?
Craigslist.
Wow. So you just went on Craigslist and found this company looking.
Yeah, I went on Craigslist and they were looking for a graphic design intern. And I think they had put the price point on there, $10 an hour. And I was living in Raleigh at the time with my cousin over the summer, and I didn't have a car. And so I paid $60 for a cab ride to go to this interview. And I just felt it in my heart that I was going to get it. I just felt so confident. So I got it. And that's where I really learned a lot about like branding guidelines and being strict with fonts. And so now I'm transitioning and getting better as a designer. I'm going from the shadows, the bevels, the gradients, all of these different fonts, all of the sparkly things to like more toned down to clean. It was a healthcare management company. So the branding was very clean and very strict. And so I got that gig and then they allowed me to work remotely when I went back to Charlotte.
Oh, wow. Wow. I think that's a huge opportunity you had to sort of, it's almost like a full circle moment with the things that you had been doing before. Now you were able to formalize it because you were in this corporate structure that allowed you to see the brand guidelines, designs, what the process actually looked like. And I'm sure you also got to see how much they were charging as well. And so what confidence did that instill in you? Because eventually you would leave that company. Mm-hmm. And what would you do next with that confidence that you just obtained?
Yeah, well, a lot of the confidence, my confidence built because of my design and my knowledge in branding. So I could actually show up much better for my clients. So I now started, I went from like only creating a website or only creating a logo to building out my clients' full brand guidelines and making sure that they had consistency with their branding. So I wanted them to show up like a legit company versus like, here's a couple random graphics that are inconsistent that might look nice on your social media.
Did you have any big wins early on? Did you have a client that you designed for and now is, you know, someone that's doing extremely important things?
Mm-hmm. Definitely Marsha with the finance bar. Like, I've been with her since the beginning, since before she even launched the finance bar. She was doing something with natural hair. And like, she's just absolutely amazing. So now she has this bus that she custom designed, and I did the photography for her branding for that as well. And she's just knocking out the park. Like, she's one of my very first clients, was with me for the longest, and probably would still be with me if I was still designing. Like, she was definitely one of those clients that was like, no, you can't start coaching. I still need you as a designer.
So you have this big client who, I mean, eventually becomes a big client, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of where you were when you helped her and mm-hmm. you saw her progression. And after doing design, you decided that eventually you wouldn't stay in design. You wouldn't do the agency work. Mm-hmm. When was that decision made? And why did you decide you were leaving something that you spent the last 5-10 years really perfecting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I made that decision in 2015. 2015, I went full-time with creating courses. My first course was called Blogademics. I was teaching people how to start their blog. And I was also transitioning into coaching full-time. One thing that I was doing when I was blogging is I was talking about my freelance journey and I was doing income reports. And I was showing people how much money that I made as a graphic designer, as a web designer. And as I was progressing, one thing that I wanted to see before I left behind design and started making money from my memberships was I wanted to see the percentage that I was making from each. And I eventually started phasing out where I was like, okay, $2,000 a month came from design, but $1,800 came from my membership and one-on-one coaching clients and anything else related to content creation. And I knew I wanted to phase out of it because I was getting frustrated working with clients who were bad at messaging. I'm like, at this point, if you are not leveraging content creation and messaging, what I'm doing for you is a waste of time and I didn't enjoy it anymore. And so one thing that I teach to my clients now is when you're pivoting, you need to ask yourself, how do I provide the highest level of impact? How do I provide the highest level of impact? And so when I first started out, the highest level of impact that I was able to provide was through web and graphic design because that's where my highest level of experience was. When I gained more wisdom and recognized that messaging and content creation and content strategy actually helped my clients further, I recognized that my highest level of impact was helping them with their content and their messaging. So it didn't make sense for me, and especially from an integrity standpoint, to continue only offering web and graphic design when I knew they needed more and I had the experience in the more that they needed. And so that's why I decided to make the difference. So when you're pivoting, you have to ask yourself, is the direction I'm moving in, does it create more joy? Does it create more impact? And does it create more money? Those are the three questions that I ask myself. And coaching and selling courses and selling information products was creating more joy for me. It was creating more impact for my clients. And it was also creating more money.
I like that. Is it creating more joy for you? Is it creating more impact? And is it creating more money for you? And it's funny you say that because that's so taboo and we'll talk about the money aspect. But before we talk through that, you said you identified that this is where you could have the most success in. So you were literally running a business that was having some success, right? Mm-hmm. You were making money for it, for the designs that you were offering people and the work that you would do as a designer for them. But then you saw, I'm really good at this messaging thing, and this is the real problem that they're having. So why did you say, you know what, let me stop doing design where you're making the most, that's where you're making money right now, the immediate money, and pivot. And here's why I'm asking that. There's some people that will run and operate a business. It doesn't work. And then they still try to make it work, mm-hmm. right? Their business isn't working. There's some people that start a business and they find something that has some success, but the thing that could have the most success, they're afraid to approach it. Mm. So what was your mindset around that?
I think my mindset was I gave myself that testing period to see, right? And that's why when I was doing my income reports, I'm like, is it true that I can make money from this? Can I make full-time revenue with this? It was essentially like, because I'll say going from design to coaching and courses was the second scariest decision I've made in my life, right? The first scariest decision was dropping out of college, disappointing my parents, and going full-time as a freelancer or as an entrepreneur. The second scariest decision was no longer being a full-time designer and going to this new industry of coaching and courses. So it's the equivalent of when people are making this decision, should I drop or should I leave my job and go full time? But that's where the testing is, right? So before you leave your full time gig, you need to actually make sure that you can make money with this side business. And so that's what I was doing. I was testing it. And that's one thing that I like to do. I like to test things, see if it's working, see how I can make it better. And I know it's possible. So I think if I can see that it's possible, then I just need to find whatever tweaks that need to be made so I can do it. I knew it was possible because I'm looking at people at the time. Pat Flynn, that's where I first saw income reports. I'm looking at this Pinch of Yum. They were doing income reports. These are all content creators and bloggers. And I'm like, I can do this if they can do this. I was studying and researching experts at the time. And I'm like, this can be done. And so once I started to see the shift in my revenue, I'm like, I'm going all in. And I remember the month that I decided to go all in, no more design clients. I'm like, I'm willing to drop in revenue to 100% focus on this new pivot. And that was the first month that I had my first five-figure month because I did a launch with my online course.
But was that scary?
Yeah, it was scary. But I think it was also that fed up thing again, right? It was scary, but it was like I was more fed up than I was scared. So like when I dropped out of college, I was over it. I was fed up. And then I was fed up with working with design clients that weren't doing the additional work that needed to be done with their website. So it was scary, but I knew that I had an audience of people that would be willing to pay me. So I'm like, even if the first couple months I'm not converting, I have faith that I'll be able to get the clients that I need.
Yeah. And I think most people, a lot of people are in that role where their current venture or their current job, they've sort of maximized everything they could do in it, but they don't know when to take that leap. Mm-hmm. And they say they're looking for a sign, but there's signs all around us, right? Mm-hmm. They think that, okay, well, this is who I am. You know, this is what people know me as. How can I just do something completely different? And that's how people knew you as. You mm-hmm. were the designer.
Yeah.
And now, you know, as the coach, people are probably listening to this episode like, wait, she was designing MySpace pages, right?
right.
And so do you have any advice on that, you know, stepping out that box that people perceive you as? Like, why are people stuck in this box of what, how others are perceiving them in order to move forward and move faster into what they're actually supposed to be doing?
Right. You know, I think the thing is people don't want to seem inconsistent, right? They don't want to seem like they don't know what they're doing. They don't want to seem like they're being random. And the best way to, I guess, create this consistency or help other people view you the way you want them to view you is to take people along with you in your journey. So at this time, Periscope was really big. And so I would go on Periscope and I would talk about my journey as a designer. I would talk about messaging and I would give branding tip after branding tip after branding tip. And finally, it's like, clearly this girl knows about branding. And I would talk about my journey as a designer and why I was pivoting. I wrote a blog post on it, why I decided to quit to shut down my design business after 7 years. And so I'm talking about this journey as I'm going through it. And people were already, they already trusted Maya Elias as Maya Elias, not just, I only trust Maya Elias if she's inside of Photoshop. And so because they trusted me, they followed along with my story and trusted the direction that I was going in.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to call out. You were, you know, building a community around you, and you were giving them firsthand visibility into, hey, these are the thoughts that I'm having. This is where I'm looking to go. So when you did make that change, there were people already, they've already built that trust with you. They said, okay, if you could do this, then you could do that, right? We've been following you. We see the tips that you're giving out. We see the advice that you're giving out, and it's working for us. And so as you pivot, we're going to go with you. You know, your tribe will follow you as well. So that's really good to know, because I know a lot of people feel stuck with where they are, mm-hmm. right? And they should be doing something else, or they shouldn't be running the business that they're running. And I know y'all want me to say, keep running that business and like keep grinding and, you know, just throw some ad dollars to it. But sometimes you have to let go of what you're currently doing if it's not fulfilling you. Right.
Yes.
If it's not the highest level of impact that you could make mm-hmm. in that position, that role, mm-hmm. If it's not also feeding you,
yeah.
if you're fed up, it's hard being in a business that you don't, if you don't enjoy it, to
yeah.
perform at a specific level for your clients, right?
Yeah.
For your customers. So you transition now and you go from the designer from MySpace to the college dropout to back to the now the more polished designer for companies and brands and influencers, entrepreneurs, to now Maya the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now people are probably listening and they think you've had all these wins and successes. What were some of the challenges in that, you know, as you look at, okay, the last 5-10 years outside of your parents, were there any conflicts that were happening inside of you? Did you ever feel like you weren't going to achieve, you know, the goal? Did you ever have an idea of who you were going to become or what you wanted to become?
Mm-hmm.
Did you fail at anything along the way? Because all people are hearing is, okay, so she just has success after success. But was that the case?
Right. It wasn't. And, you know, I try to be mindful of when I'm telling my story to not make it just only the highlight reel. I think I'm just so grateful and I'm so proud of myself that it's hard to even remember the hard moments, because in hindsight, I'm like, Maya, that was so little. Like the big scary things that were so scary back then, they're so little now. I'm like, I wish I had those problems today. But technically I don't, because those little problems matched up with little revenue. But I think, some of the challenges that I had, a lot of it again was mindset. And one thing that I really struggled with early on, and I shouldn't even say early on, but I would say 2015, 2016, 2017 was boundaries and vision. And it was hard for me to think really big for myself because, you know, the most successful thing that we saw online was people running a 6-figure business. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to strive for 6 figures. And that was like my main goal. And I remember 2016, I made like $89,000. And I knew I should have hit 6 figures because I was already doing 5 figures a month fairly consistently. And I had some months where it was off. And I know mentally and subconsciously that the reason that I did not hit 6 figures is because I lacked in boundaries and I lacked in vision. And for me, like at the time, I had people around me that always needed something from me. And because I'm really giving, I'm always giving, 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 no questions asked, or people constantly asking me, and I'm giving, giving, giving. And because I'm always giving, I'm like, what's the point of me in hitting this 6-figure goal if I don't get to enjoy it for myself? I'm always helping somebody with rent. I'm always helping somebody with a bill. I'm always helping somebody do whatever it is. So for me, vision and boundaries was one of the things that I struggled with most. And then 2017, the end of 2017, that's when two things happened. That's when Built to Impact was born, and I launched the agency, and I did really well with that. But that was also the month that I went to go live with V and Regina in Mexico. And it was like this eat, pray, love month of mine where I was just constantly reading mindset books, expanding my mindset, expanding what I thought was possible for myself, reading about boundaries. I read the book Boundaries by Henry Cloud and John Townsend before I went on that trip. And I'm like, what do I want for myself? Because I can't keep shrinking to accommodate everybody else around me.
So typically, thank you for recommending some of those books so people could check them out. And shout out to our friends, Varick and Regina, who, that experience when I went out there too with them, like changed, my life and my mindset. But when you think about boundaries, you said I had to start with what I wanted, mm-hmm. right? So what does that mean? Because this is an area that I even struggle in, mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people struggle in setting these boundaries.
Yep.
So what does that mean when you say, what do I need? Because, I struggle with it because I come from a household where we were raised to think about everyone else but ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. It was never about you. It was about everyone else.
Yep.
But you're saying you're starting to have some success, but you realize every step you climb, you got to turn around. You got to put someone else on your back. You have to pay another bill. You have to. And you're doing all of this, but you're not enjoying any of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So when you say, what do I need? What did you learn from that question that you asked yourself?
Yeah, there's a couple things. I remember having a conversation with my copywriter at the time. She wrote all the copy for me and our clients in the agency. And she started transitioning into like mindset, woo-woo spirituality stuff. And so she and I had a conversation and she was like, let's go deeper into why you feel like you have to show up for everybody. And I had another conversation with a friend where she's like, you're the dependable friend. People come to you. And so when I had the conversation with my copywriter, she's like, it sounds a lot like you're like your dad. Because my dad was the oldest sibling of like 8 or 9 people. He's the one that got them to come to this country. He took care of the family from his side and from my mom's side. And so I think, I'm just like, oh, I'm being like my dad. Like my dad helps everybody, so I help everybody. And she's like, so I had the conversation with my copywriter and she's like, let's go deeper. She's like, it sounds a lot like your dad, right? Like he was a provider. He provided for your mom's side of the family. He provided for his side of the family as the oldest brother. And he was like, or she was like, you have to understand that for your dad, that was probably a sense of pride for him. For you, it's creating stress for you. So you have to decide like, what is it that you want? And so for me, I don't even think I knew what I wanted. I just knew what I didn't want. And I knew I just wanted to get away. And so in my mind, I'm like, I was thinking about doing this program called the Remote Year, where you would travel to a new country every single year with a group of people. I decided not to do it because I wasn't really quite sure about the community and all of that. But I was also like, Maya, this isn't the answer. You fleeing the country because you don't know how to say no to people is not solving the issue of boundaries. So I still needed to learn that. But I was like, okay, well, let me go to Mexico for a month and then I'll come back. So I ended up moving out of my aunt's house and I got my own place. And I just started learning a lot more about myself. I took this manifestation course. I started meditating more. I started doing affirmations more. I started praying more and really just getting to know myself. And my goal during that season was to just expand my vision. So I went to Mexico in from like October to November, came back home for the holidays, moved into my own place. And then in 2018, I remember my word for the year was expansion, because all I wanted to do was just expand my mind and have the mental capacity to do it without anybody else's limitations imposing on that.
So you went to Mexico, you decided you needed better boundaries. And it's funny that you say, I can't run escape out the country, because I'm like, I think about that all the time.
And we talked about that. I'm like, that's not the answer.
Right. That's not the answer. And you have to sort of address, what am I willing to not do anymore? And I think that's the important question that you found yourself doing. So you get back from Mexico. You now have more clarity into sort of the direction, I'm guessing, that you want to move towards. So what did you decide? When did you decide, okay, I'm going to be Maya, the full-time coach?
So, what's interesting right before Mexico, I was, you know, still working on mindset and stuff like that. And that's when I had this vision of, you know, I have this company, I have this agency. My team is primarily women of color. We have amazing clients. And that's when Built to Impact was born. And so after Mexico, I'm like, okay, I finally believe I can run a $1 million company. All I have to do is get 100 people to pay me $10,000. And that's what's going on in my mind, because my packages at the time were $10,000. And so, of course, you know, Built to Impact as an agency, you know, hit six figures. But I'm like, okay. Again, I went back to the design and I'm like, I remember again now why I don't like doing design. So I was like, let's kill that. So, you know, I phased out the projects that I was doing, but I'm like, what do I want next? And I remember, you know, I started getting really big on writing things down. So a couple of things that I had written down, I had like 100% debt free, 100% healthy, $40,000 a month. And at that time I was maybe making $10,000 a month. I had no idea how I would get to $40,000 a month. But another thing that I had written down was 3-day weekend event. And I didn't know what that was going to be. It was something like 3-day weekend or something. And that was Impact Weekend before I knew what Impact Weekend was. So again, this was 2018. And then later that summer, I had met you. And I was working on the sales page for Impact Weekend. And that was really the birth of Impact Weekend for Built to Impact. So I was still finding a lot of clarity. And I think that's really important to note, because you're always going to be learning about yourself and learning about what you want to offer as an entrepreneur. Impact Weekend is one of our most successful offers to date. But think about how many years it took me to get there. Launching my agency multiple times, having multiple services within the agency, having 4 different masterclasses, 2 different online courses, 2 different coaching programs, and then finally putting that all together and saying, I want to teach this in a 2 or 3 day format. So 2018 was when I finally did Impact Weekend for the first time in September, and then it is what it is today.
And can you let people know what's the purpose of Impact Weekend? Because you still run it currently. Mm-hmm. And so when you decided, and I remember you were thinking about doing this 3-day weekend event, and you just had your 3rd year, you're going on your 4th year of Impact Weekend. Mm-hmm. And what is that for those that are listening in and saying, you know, what's Impact Weekend? Should I be doing that?
Yeah. So Impact Weekend is a live 3-day event where I am helping entrepreneurs master their message and build their online brand and figure out what their it thing is, or figure out how to monetize their it thing, I should say. And when I first started it, it was 12 women in an Airbnb. And I just wanted it to be like a mastermind weekend where it's like, let's get this work done. I'm your facilitator. I'm going to teach you everything that I know about branding, about content creation, and about putting together your signature offer, which is what we now do inside of my accelerator program. And I basically took what I had learned over the past 4 years through all of my courses and previous coaching programs and put it inside of Impact Weekend. And that's what it is today.
Wow. Wow. And literally, I remember when you were just starting it. And so it's amazing that what you've been able to build with it. And now you're Maya. And what do people know you as today?
That's a great question. I think people still know me as a branding strategist or personal branding strategist or business coach. Like, that is what they know me for. And that is what I am. I think this year has been, you know, interesting as I really step into this role as CEO. I'm like, well, what do people see me as? Do they still see me as the coach? Do they see me as a speaker? Do they see me as somebody that just runs a company? But I think for the most part, people are like, she's the business coach. She's the person that helps, you know, other people get their messaging together.
Okay. So what I want to do now is let's change up the pace.
Okay.
And what I want to do is I want to ask you some questions about, because you've had a, you know, very successful few businesses that you've built, and more so a very successful life, because you were able to cultivate the life that you wanted to live, and the businesses help, but you are solely focused on what's my lifestyle, you know, what are the things that I'm doing. So I want to ask you, I'm going to ask you some about your work. I'm going to ask you some about where you are currently today, just to give people an idea, because you and I could sit here all day and talk, but we got the AC off. I know it's getting hot in here. And so we'll definitely have to bring you back for another episode. But let me ask you a few questions, if you don't mind. The first question is, what's the biggest mental barrier that you see a lot of entrepreneurs that you're coaching?
This level of imposter syndrome. Like, I'm not allowed to call myself an expert. I'm not allowed to charge more money. I'm not allowed to charge any money because this comes so easily to me. So that level of imposter syndrome where they feel like they can show up and get paid like an expert is what I see very commonly.
Can you talk about some of the entrepreneurs that have had success that you've worked with, and how did that success look like for them, even if it was their first sale?
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, there's so many. Let me think. I think what I primarily see is, you know, people come and they're like, well, I have an idea of what I'm good at. And, you know, when I have a conversation and I talk about their experience and I talk about their story, I'm like, no, this is so much more than what you brought to me, right? Because I think we have a tendency to downplay our stories. We have a tendency to downplay our experiences because it comes so naturally to us. And then when I deep dive and go further, I'm like, oh, you've done a lot of things here. Like, and that's what positioning is, right? People are not very good at positioning themselves, excuse me, because they don't see the value in what they do, right? And once they figure out that it thing that makes them the best in their industry, that changes everything. Then they finally, like, they sit up more straight. They're like, wait a minute, no, I am the best. Like, the price is the price and all of that. So I love helping people see that very unique thing about them that makes them extremely valuable. Because oftentimes people feel like, well, everybody else can do it as well, so why am I valuable? And it's like, here's exactly why you're valuable. Let's go to this specific part of your story and this specific mention of your experience.
And that's a really good point, because people don't see the value sometimes that they bring. What is maybe one or two questions? I know there's a long list of questions you typically have your, you know, audience ask themselves in order to see that value, but can you think of any questions that they should ask themselves?
Yeah. The number one question that we have our clients answer inside of module one of our accelerator is, what are you the absolute best at? What are you the best at? Because you have to feel extremely confident at being the best. Like, don't try to sell anything that you're okay at. Don't try to sell anything that you're mediocre at. Don't even try to sell things that you're good at. Sell what you are excellent in. And so we're like, what are you the absolute best at? And let's build a brand around that.
That's really good. That's really good. You know, you want to be the best in what you're doing because you want to provide that value to your audience, your customers, as well. So I think that's really, really good. Now, what questions should they ask themselves around messaging, right? Because a lot of times people don't know how to convey their message. Mm-hmm. You know, is there a question that comes to mind that you have people typically answer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ask them who they are best equipped to serve, right? Because a lot of our skill sets are transferable in terms of who the audience is. So technically we can help everybody, but we're not called to help everybody. And I'm best equipped to hire Black women of faith because I am a Black woman of faith. And so it's like, this doesn't mean that a teenager couldn't leverage my information. This doesn't mean that a white male couldn't leverage my information. It just means I have the most connection with a Black woman because that's who I am and that's who I connect with. So I ask them, who are you best equipped to serve? That's your audience. And then what are they struggling with and what are their desires? And then your messaging has to speak to that. They want to know that you understand their struggles and they want to know that you can help them achieve their desires.
No, that was really good. That was really good. I'm over here like, dang, yeah, you're right. What advice or something you could give entrepreneurs who are trying to build a lifestyle or build a life outside of their business? because that's something I think most of us struggle in. We get into our work and we think it's all about the work. But how do you, or what advice could you offer them into building a lifestyle outside of their business?
Yeah, I think it's, you have to sit and think about, what are my priorities? What is extremely important to me? And prioritize the things that are important to you and make sure your business fits into that priority, right? And, you know, I think it's going to look different for everybody based on what their own fears are, based on what their own background is. And, you know, one thing that I say about my start is that I've been very fortunate in, because I started so young and because I didn't come from a place of poverty, I really got to enjoy my business. I got to enjoy making money without the pressure of making money. So if my business, God forbid, had ever hit $0, I would have been good, because I come from a two-parent home where they're both making money and I can always fall back on that. I wish that everybody could have that same level of privilege where they enjoy their business for the sake of enjoyment instead of money. And so for me, my lifestyle is around, if this stresses me out, then I'm not going to do it. And not just stress in a way that's like, oh, this is challenging me and it's going to push me forward. But it's like, I don't have to be stressed or struggle to make money. I don't have to do things that I don't want to in order to make money, because I'm covered. And so for me, I want to make sure that I continue to do my best to maintain that level of peace.
No, I love that. I love that. And again, we could sit here and talk all day, and we'll really have to bring you back for another episode so we could dive even deeper into some of the, you know, conversations around marketing and digital ads and paid ads. But I think this interview, and the reason why I wanted to, you know, get this sort of your perspective, your ideas, your ideals, and sort of your blueprint into what makes who you are, is because in so many of your podcasts, you're jumping into strategy. Mm-hmm. But I want people to understand that, like, you also have an origin story, mm-hmm. and it wasn't that easy. There were a lot of difficult decisions you had to make. And as entrepreneurs, what I try to do is peel the layer back. These are the non-Instagrammable moments. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't even talk about, you had a $1 million launch. Right. Like, we could talk a whole episode just about how you made $1 million in a launch. But it's, well, what were you going through when you made that $1 million? You know, then what happened after 4 months later? Right. So there's so many things that I think we could highlight. But, you know, I definitely want to continue our conversation in another episode. So Okay. You're going to have to come back. I'll turn the AC on. Okay. You know, I'll turn the AC on. And so, Mai, before we go, can you let people know about the businesses that you're running and also where to find you as well?
Mm-hmm. So the businesses that I'm running, Built to Impact, which is my primary business, my baby that I've had for so long now, is my coaching and live event company. We have a 12-week program called The Accelerator, and this is where we work with our clients to help them develop and launch an offer that can generate 5 figures per month. And we also have a live event called Impact Weekend Live, which I told you guys a little bit about. That's going to be in February, which I'm very excited about. So if you go to builttoimpact.com, you can learn more about that there. But it's absolutely life-changing. If you're ready to get your business off the ground, if you're ready to show up as an expert and eliminate this imposter syndrome that you've been dealing with for years, Impact Weekend is definitely something that you want to sign up for. And then earlier this year, I launched a fitness apparel brand called Rebellious, a play on my name, Maya Elias. And I really just created it because I needed to start working out during the pandemic. And I was wearing a lot of cute fitness sets and people were asking me, and I decided to build a business out of it.
And what's that website?
RebelliousFit.com. Rebellious with one L. So same spelling as my last name, R-E-B-E-L-I-O-U-S.
Awesome. So, Yes, and we didn't even talk about that either, you know, that e-commerce business. And yeah. So there's so many things we definitely want to bring Maya back to talk about. So Maya, thank you so much for joining this episode, the Powered AF podcast show. So thank you. And if those of you are listening in, I know we talked a lot about, you know, the lifestyle and the mindset and some of the challenges and how to overcome that in this episode. So if you enjoy it, please make sure to leave us a review. Make sure you go tap into and you learn more about Maya. Find her on Instagram, her website as well. Check out Built to Impact. I'll link all of that below. So thank you all for listening in, and I will see you all during the next episode. All right. Thank you for joining us at the Powered AF podcast. Make sure to visit our website and make sure to follow our podcast anywhere you listen to the podcast to make sure you never miss a show. And please, 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 if you enjoyed this episode and this show, please make sure to leave us a review. It really, really does help. And last thing, if you're interested in this freebie that I just released, I want you to check this out. Recently, I put together a free online training on how to 10x your sales online. This is for business owners who are struggling with making consistent sales online. Whether you run a product or service-based business, this is the perfect training for you. The free training is still up, and you can access it by going to poweryourlaunch.com/pod. Again, poweryourlaunch.com/pod. That's P-O-D. All right. Thanks again for listening in. I'll see you during our next show.